Blog Talk Radio.
Still not proficient in learning how to dial down the intro song. This is tonight's show is on healing with sounding color, talking about the chakra system. I'm Bill Green, your host for the next hour, welcoming you to yet another episode of The Greenhouse Effect, which is about healing with sounding color. The last couple episodes have dealt with various themes of breath work, which is the main focus of tonight's show and future shows as well. Last week we talked about the mandala artwork and what the value of artwork is and how it can help to augment, heighten, and enlighten the breathwork experience. Now, breathwork is working with the frequency of sound and the vibration of the body, which can often perform a beautiful dance of inner healing. Breathwork is one form of meditation that can open the doorway to really a miraculous experience. Now, the mandala experience or artwork really deals more with working with colors. And the working with colors in itself can produce so much more of a deepening of a meditative experience than just the dialogue of the experience itself tries to do. Now, the artwork is a symbolic representation of what was experienced during the breathwork. And sometimes the idea of doing artwork in itself can be intimidating for folks. I know it was initially for me, and I won't get into the story of what I talked about before in relation to that. But it's more about the colors used to depict the symbol than it is the symbol itself, although the symbol has a great deal of value as well. And tonight, we're going to take a deeper look into, and we talked last week about the chakra system, especially in regards to the color, the colors associated with each chakra and how knowing those colors and defining for yourself those colors can help again in a deeper meditation and intention and purpose of what it was that actually came from your soul. You know, I like to think of artwork as a snapshot from the soul. So tonight, again, we'll be talking more about the chakra system and the corresponding colors. But before I get into all of that, I want to welcome everyone who has tuned in tonight. And hopefully you will find tonight's show to be entertaining, enjoyable, and maybe even to some degree enlightening. Of course, that's always the hope, and we, meaning Will and I, Will Green, my oldest son, and I always feel that your coming onto the show and even just sharing your energy of attendance really goes a long way in giving us the inspiration to continue with future shows. Although I have a feeling that we would continue anyway, if it was just he and I, just having what we call an elaborate phone call. Now, there's a couple things I do want to let you know as far as the show itself is concerned. The Greenhouse Effect is Will's brand, you know, and the Healing with Sound and Color is the presentation of the Greenhouse Effect that has been charged to me to share with you what this whole dynamic has to offer to all of us who partake in the idea of meditation. Our journey with sound and art combines three elements, but the two most important in giving some type of energy, I guess is the best word to use, to the experience is the sound or the frequency of music working with the vibration of the body. All of our bodies are held together by an incredible vibration, right? All of our organs are but a cluster of cells that are binded together by this vibration. And I don't know, I haven't explored it or asked questions about it to physicians or metaphysicians, but I have a feeling that when the body dies, the vibration dies. And when the vibration dies, the cells die, and when the cells die, of course, then they decompose. Maybe that's how it works, maybe not. I don't know. But knowing that we're held, even the heart is a cluster of cells that is held together by this high frequency. So when you think about it on those lines, it would make sense that, well, to me anyway, it would make sense that vibration and frequency would have something in common. You know, think about sound as it relates to your own behavior or your own reactions or your own thoughts or whatever. You know, some sounds are pleasant, some sounds are not as pleasant. Some sounds can be distracting and some sounds can be downright unnerving, but there's no clear blueprint of that because what can affect one person negatively is another person's bliss. You know, I used to use music as a comparative with my oldest son in particular. There was a particular time in our life together where he and I went to this university. It was like, it wasn't freshman day. It was more of an introduction to the possibility of attending the school. I think it was the University of Michigan. But anyway, we got off the bus and we're heading to the campus. And he had his Walkman, this is how long ago it was, he had his Walkman plugged in. And I could kind of hear some of the, what he was listening to, some of the music. And it was rap. And I turned to him and said, man, how can you listen to that rap junk? You know, and he looked at me and said, Dad, you know, to us, it's like the blues. And I had a reaction, you know, initially that was very negative. But at that moment, I had a flashback to a time with one of my dear cousins, my cousin Marty, and I, and we were talking as teenagers, and it just, the whole conversation came back to me. We had said to each other that no matter what happened, we would never get so out of tune with our children that we would never be able to relate to their music. And, you know, and like a sense of shame came over me at that moment, but I shared the story with my son, Will, and we had a good laugh about it. You know, I don't see anybody in the chat room right now, so I don't know if, in fact, I'm broadcasting. Hopefully I am. There's always one person who, well, almost always, who tunes into the show, Cousin Adam, and he's like my sound man. But Will and I, because we usually do the shows together, are each other's sound men. So with him not being here tonight, hopefully he said he might, you know, check in later on just to see if, in fact, we are on. I'm flying solo, and it's challenging for me to do that because that means I also have to man the controls. But so far, it doesn't look like it's going to be a major challenge because there doesn't seem to be much activity going on in the studio that would suggest an overwhelming need for listeners to make comments. If, in fact, you would like to be able to make comments, then it's a matter of having to dial in 516-453-6094. That will put you directly into the studio, and I will see your phone number come up in the switchboard. That doesn't mean that, you know, you're on the spot or anything, because if you don't want to make comments, then you don't need to press 1 on your dial pad, which would let me know that there are comments you want to make. And also, you could join the chat room through Blog Talk Radio. And joining the chat room requires a credit card, and nothing's charged. In all the years we've been doing this, there's never been anyone complaining about having received a charge. That's just if you should decide to do your own show. But once you do that, then you have access to the chat room, and then I'll be able to read your comments directly. Now, when Will is manning the controls, he also has the skill and ability to track you on the Internet, Facebook primarily, and I think he does it with other outlets as well, and he could read your comments there. I have not graduated or gravitated to that level of response yet. So I'm still a work in process. Some people say progress, but I use the word process because process always suggests that there's a whole lot of other crap going on, you know, like your self-doubt, you know, shame, feelings of stupidity, all those things that are somewhat self-deprecating. I'm a master of self-deprecation because I was raised Catholic. It's just a joke, just a joke. Calm down. I am still very much Catholic in my orientation toward God, because that was my initial vehicle that brought me into a realm of spiritual consciousness. My Catholic upbringing also in many ways saved my life. I reached a crossroads in my life that, you know, rigid Catholic teaching made it clear to me that if I chose to go in the wrong direction, I would never find my way back on my path of spiritual enlightenment. And of course, we didn't call it spiritual enlightenment when we're teenagers or young adults. I had succumbed to alcoholism, you know, and the progression of the illness, of course, robbed me of all conscious contact with the God of my understanding. But when I arrived at that crossroad, which is referred to in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think all of the other 12-step programs as well, as hitting bottom, you know, when you hit your bottom, you know, there's a fear of death, but there's also a fear of having to live yet another day of that addictive misery. So the fear of dying and the fear of living yet another day of death is, I don't know anything that could top that as far as hitting a bottom is concerned. So a lot of times people hit false bottoms. They're kind of like landings. And y'all might not be old enough or ever had the experience of living in apartment buildings. And in the back, there's always the space between floors when you go down the back steps, and they're landing. So sometimes on the way to a bottom, folks will hit those landings before they finally hit absolute devastation of the rocks below. So here we are at tonight's show, dealing with the concepts of the chakra system. As highlighted in the description of the show, it said tonight's show will explore the chakra system and the corresponding colors. In Sanskrit, the word chakra means disc or wheel. And I didn't even realize that I had made a typo, and it has to do with the energy centers of the human body. And these wheels or discs are spinning energy. Each correspond to certain nerve bundles and major organs. In this situation or in this presentation, we'll be talking about what is referred to as the seven major chakras. Now, some teach that there are as many as 114 different chakras in the body. I don't doubt that for a second. And all of these discs and wheels spin in relation to whatever their purpose is in moving energy through the body. But the main seven is what we're going to focus on tonight. And they run along the spine. They start at the root or base of the spine and extend to the crown or the top of the head. Some teach that there is more to these seven chakras than what, like, we'll be talking about tonight. And I imagine that's true in almost all courses of study where you delve deeper into the hidden meanings behind the basic understandings. Almost always there's more that's revealed, right? That's just the nature of growing in wisdom and knowledge and education. The first chakra we're going to talk about tonight. Oh, first, let me ask you, are there any questions? All right, that's my stupid joke for the night. The root chakra located at the base. You know, it's funny. I did what I tend to do whenever I prepare a script for a show. I tend to do my own research on topics. So I delve deeper into the chakra system, and I write everything out. And as I was writing, everything started really looking familiar to me, you know. And it's like, wait a minute. This isn't like you aren't having a spiritual experience. You're having more of an aha. Like, you already wrote about all this. And I mean, I totally forgot. That's so crazy. In my book, Dysfunctional by Design, The Rebirth of Cultural Survivors, which was published in 1995, in the back of the book, so the appendices, I'm not sure how you pronounce it in plural form, but there is Appendix 4, which talks about the seven levels of soul energy. And these are really describing the chakra system. So I'm just going to read right from the book directly. And still, you know, if something's missed, come back to what I wrote down. But I do want, hopefully, in the end, to offer you the opportunity to go on the internet and dial up or cue in a chakra test that you can take. And it's called the Ultimate Dominant Chakra Test. Find out which is yours. And I'll repeat that hopefully by the end of the show. And maybe you can check it out. I took the test, but I forgot to check what my answers were. So I took it again, remembering what the results were from the beginning, just to see, you know, what would happen. And it came back the same way. And for me, the chakra test revealed that the third eye chakra, or the Ajna Center, whose color is indigo, is my dominant chakra. Very interesting on a lot of levels for me. Anyway, so the seven levels of soul energy. The first level is the protector of the ego self, located at the base of the spine. This can be a very aggressive and violent force that adheres to the basic instinct of fight or flight, or flight or fight, depending on which way you operate. It activates the adrenal glands. It makes sense, right? And the spiritual component of this level is the will to survive. Now, the first three levels are the will levels. This is where all ego conflict is born from, these first three chakras, which are what once again referred to as the will chakras, the will to survive, the will to feel, and the will to know. From these three, conflict is born. And one of these three areas, or a collection of all three maybe, you know, conflict reveals itself. So the will to survive, you know, is the context of the first level. The second level, the keynote of this level is passion, enthusiasm to take on relationships. Wow. This is an emotional level, where feelings of grief, sadness are experienced. It activates the sexual glands as well. And the spiritual component is the will to feel, or what we also like to say in this work is the urge to merge. Now, I'm going to just talk a little bit more about the second chakra, which is referred to as the sacral chakra. Now, the first chakra is the root chakra. The second, the sacral, you know, it's located right a couple inches below the navel, and is all about creativity and sexuality. And we tend to, confuse sexuality with sex. You know, sexuality deals with the overall essence of the being, not just with the sexual drive. You know, it's how we see ourselves, it's how I see myself, how I see others, and how I assume others see me. And it can be a very complex developing circumstance, you know, being born black or into black consciousness, revealed in the early age that, at a very early age, that I had some conflicts around my sex and sexuality, you know, and that conflict carried itself on through my adult years, and in many ways still influences me and my sexuality today. Again, not confusing sexuality with sex, but not disregarding how they orchestrate one to the other. It became in its own right a development of complexities. And, you know, the funny thing is for me that I didn't realize the degree of complexities until when I was first writing this book, Dysfunctional by Design, I had the opportunity to write a letter to someone who is, at least in my introduction to meditation through breath work, Dr. Stanislav Grof, who had developed a model called holotropic breath work. And the integrative breath work that I learned from was born from a teacher of his, a student teacher of his. In fact, probably a co-facilitator at one point of his, Jacqueline Small, who is no longer really doing the work anymore, but she operates out of Austin, Texas with Eusakia Institute. And I believe the Institute still can be Googled and information still made available as far as what much of the teachings were about. But also she came out with a book, Awakening in Time, The Journey from Codependence to Co-Creation. And in that book, she really does what I consider to be an excellent teaching job in explaining the chakra system. So, and she was also on Oprah, interviewed by Oprah, a last-minute replacement for someone, and so that she didn't even let those of us who were her followers, so to say, her groupies, you know, let us know that she was even going to be on the show. So we saw the tape of it. And although it wasn't much Jacqueline context, it was mostly Oprah, you know, asking questions. And then she would say things like, isn't that right, Jacqueline? You know, but it wasn't much spontaneity that Jacqueline was really allowed to provide. But nevertheless, at the end of the show, Oprah held up the book, although upside down, Awakening in Time. You know, so it doesn't matter with Oprah, right? She held up the book upside down, but it was Awakening in Time. And I was told later on by one of her office managers that the book got like a hit of like 10,000 requests for orders, you know, and that's the power of the medium, right? That's the power of the media. And that's the power of individuals, you know, who are on the same line or frequency or consciousness as those of the rest of us are. So mentorship and validation is very important in pursuing one's own life's purpose. So I've completely lost my direction here as far as how I segued, or I should say lost track of where I was heading and ventured into the Jacqueline Oprah thing. But I'm just kind of like wherever I may have been, sorry, there's nobody to help bring me back. I'll just go from where I am, and hopefully, it the threads will still connect. You know, in writing the book and talking about, okay, Dr. Grof is kind of coming back to me, and writing a letter to him, and it was really much of a sense of wanting to deepen in my understanding of the work. He wrote a letter back to me, and I'm not going to read either letter to you. But it was in relation to African Americans. And I wrote in my book, Americans of African Descent Are the Remnants of a Forgotten Past or Are Living in a Reactionary Consciousness of Social Commentary. It is a no-exit constellation that redefines itself every few generations. Now, that no-exit constellation is what I borrowed from Dr. Grof, who had, in his response to the letter I wrote, talked about my culture, you know, the black people of America as experiencing a no exit constellation. I thought it was like, you know, somewhat cerebral or having to deal with the universe. And now I wrote this book in 95, and I just took no exit constellation as meaning what I defined it to be. And something etheric, and I didn't know I was taking it out of context. I thought I was taking it within the realm of the context I understood. And it wasn't until last year. So, you know, we're talking, you know, what, I don't know, almost 30 years later that I'm talking with a dear friend of mine. We were at a breath workshop in Colorado. At the name of the place was Love's Ranch. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, you know. And she was making reference to my book. She's herself white, and she deals with some African-American females in her program, in her classes. And so she raised an issue that developed between her and the client, but I'm not going to get into all that. What was important for our conversation was the no-exit constellation. And it was as I was talking about, you know, the themes of African-Americans in treatment, that she, and I mentioned No Exit Consolation, and she kind of had a pause of a, ah. And she said, well, what does that mean to you? And that put me on the spot because now I'm getting into teacher-student territory, like, oh, I'm getting ready to make the wrong answer. So I just, you know, did what I did, do what I do, danced around it, gave as confusing of an answer I could so I wouldn't be held to anything that I said. And she said, well, you know, anytime that we read or hear about No Exit Constellations, and we're talking about in the realm of psychotherapy, she said, it always has to do with complexities, complexes. And I thought, my God, you know, the man shared with something with me that although I held as being profound, I never really knew the profundity of the statement, you know, as it relates to me, a No Exit Constellation in regards to complexes or various complexes describes my journey. How so, you may ask? Well, you know, think about it. Born from slavery, right, and evolving into the themes of colored, Negro, Afro, Black, and African American, you know, presented its own dynamics of complexities or complexes that can only be defined by the individual as the individual is moving through a process of developing an understanding of their own sexuality, you know, and this whole theme, when she shared it with me, didn't discount anything at all that I had experienced, but helped me to better understand why there was such a lack of the definition or even accurate diagnosis, because I come from a culture born in America, yeah, you know, as indigenous as the indigenous tribes of this country, you know, that has never been researched. So whatever my diagnosis of my behaviors are, they're always in relation to the diagnosis of a Eurocentric model, because that's the model that psychotherapy is dominated by. And there's, at least not that I know of, not a separate school that deals with its own pure research of an Afrocentric development of consciousness in America that is purely based Africanism or African-Americanism, you know, that is solely based on, not influenced by any other. Now, if it turns out to be the same, great, but it's not influenced by any other research already done. I'll give you an example of what I mean. Dr. Benjamin Rush, the signer of the Declaration of Independence. And in Chicago, there's a hospital, Rush St. Luke's Presbyterian Hospital. I don't know the sequence. But anyway, Dr. Benjamin Rush is considered to be the father of American psychiatry. And in his early research and teachings, he talked about the Negro. I'm assuming he talked about the Negro slave. And he said that one thing that they suffer from is negritude, that it's a conflict of the skin that is similar to what's that debilitating, degenerating disease, leprosy. And he said the only cure was to become white. Now, I don't know if he meant the skin or if he meant the mind or if he meant a combination of the skin and mind. But someone said they thought that he was referring to the skin because one of his patients was a Black man who was developing, I forget the name of what it's called, I apologize. But, you know, when the pigments start falling away from the skin and this very pure pink-white color unfolds. Anyway, you know, his research suggested that that's what the cure would be, becoming white. And I'm sure that there's many other contexts to make and developing deeper into that. But my point is he may have changed his mind later in researching the overall psychiatric response of Black people in America, but the original students who heard that were still influenced by the original teaching, and they themselves probably didn't explore wherever his further research may have taken him. So when I talk about research that is Afrocentric, I mean Americans of color, particularly Black Americans who have any lineage or context or contact with African legacy or ancestry, that all of the previous Eurocentric models being recognized would be sort of like the precursor of saying, okay, this is where we need to redirect our research so it's purely, you know, about the Black experience in America. You know, so until that really happens, you know, these complexes can't help but to be born, just struggling to survive in a society that really isn't about, you know, your survival. And we see that, you know, so evident today, but I'm getting off track, and I'll save this for a future session or future program or future show. Matter of fact, Will told me, Dad, you don't want to start on that because, you know, you're getting ahead of yourself. Just give us the basic foundation of breath work and meditation. So coming back then to what I had already written, which I had totally forgotten about, and coming back to the seven levels of soul energy, moving into the second chakra, I talked a little bit about it. The keynote is passion and this enthusiasm to take on relationships. Okay, moving into the third level, it's the seat of the ego. The third level is called the, give me just a second here, it's the solar plexus chakra. And it's at the seat of the ego. Identity begins to develop as various roles of life are experienced. As the human of the being unfolds, dogmatic, authoritarian, and judgmental behavior associated with self-righteous causes in the nature of humanity can develop. This level activates the spleen, the sympathetic nerves, and the pancreas. The spiritual component is the will to know. So we move through the will to survive to the will to feel and the will to know. And this third level tends to be where so many of us remain. And I don't want to say remain stuck, but we become intellectually enlightened. You know, there is movements all over America where people refer to themselves as the intellectuals. And absolutely, they are intellectually enlightened. They are totally immersed in their courses of study and how their courses of study relate to their own particular paths in human consciousness and in society. No doubt about it, a very powerful place to arrive. But the will to know in itself is not the what I would refer to as the blissful state of spiritual enlightenment. It's actually the last threshold or stronghold of the ego. We haven't transcended ourselves at this stage. We are becoming totally intellectually understanding of ourselves at this stage. It's the fourth level where the first transpersonal level begins to happen, and it's the level beyond individuation. So the first three are all about individuation, and we move into the fourth level, which is the heart chakra. The heart opens to a process that cleanses the soul of the conditional truth of the ego, of the conditional truth of the ego. As the ego surrenders to the universal truth, and this truth is capital T, of the cosmos, the lower levels, 1 through 3, of spiritual energy begin to merge with the higher levels, 5 through 7. It is during this merging process that the ego, as self-will, dies to be born again as the love of self, capital S. The thymus is reactivated, or for some, activated. Now, the thymus is a gland-like organ that supposedly ceases to function in adults. But what point is being made here is that when you move into fourth level consciousness, it's reactivated, and an awakening to the higher levels of consciousness occurs. Now, this is pure Bill Green speculation, and I only profess to be an expert in one area, right? And that's my own opinion. So whatever I'm expressing, hold me to it, you know. But I just found this fascinating. The thymus is a gland-like organ that supposedly ceases to function in adults. But in this work of, you know, developing a deeper understanding of inner consciousness, there is something that happens at this fourth level where the heart reawakens. Now, I'm not talking about the physical heart as we know it. I'm not talking about, therefore, the mechanical heart. It's that space just above the heart muscle itself at the center of the chest, you know, and it deals with our ability to both give and receive love to ourselves and others. So I think that once that is really moved into as an expression of self, that this thymus is reactivated. So moving to the fifth level, it's a higher reflection of the third level. It is the expression center, the voice of the whole truth. The whole truth, again, capital T. It is the illumination of love of truth, capital T, and it's ruled by the thyroid. Now, one thing that I need to also highlight that I haven't done, but first let me say this, that this fifth level chakra, the throat chakra is what it's called. And I'll come back to the other elements of what I want to talk about, the other aspects of what I want to talk about. And I want to just be sure I move through these. I'm watching, I got my eye on what I'm reading from, my eye on my own imaginative interpretation of what's coming out of my mouth, and my eye on the clock. So I need three eyes. Oh, that brings me to the sixth level. You know, and Christ consciousness is reawakened at this level. The mind's eye, or the third eye. So I got my third eye wide open right now. You know, the symbol of wisdom. I'm not saying that I'm wise, but what I'm saying is what is written and researched, you know, is teaching me things, is manifested through the metaphysical properties of the collective unconsciousness, or the collective unconscious, I'm sorry. It is a healing level, ruled by the pituitary gland, the master gland, connected at the base of the skull. Compassion is the keynote of this level. So the sixth level, or the Ajna center, located at the base of the skull, right, and is recognized through the third eye, or in between the eyebrows, or even referred to often as the brow chakra. So there's a tunnel, base of the spine through the skull to this third eye that opens. So it's like defined by sometimes this white light or yellow light, you know, that just cascades and splashes into a meditative experience. And that's, you know, experience of the third eye, maybe just beginning to open. Now, the seventh level is the transformational level. That's the crown chakra at the very top of the head, where the love of God, or higher self, or capital S, transcends attachment to the needs of the ego self, which is small s. Self-mastery is the keynote of this level. It is ruled by the pineal gland, and a gland of uncertain properties located in the brain at the top of the head. You know, and the pineal gland, I think, and especially located where it is in the brain at the top of the head, is something to consider. I don't know if you all ever had, I don't know if any of you have had in going through the COVID test, where they would run this this red light from this machine to test your temperature across your forehead. Some people wouldn't do that because they said that ultra red light, you know, was like shining directly onto, you know, the pineal gland, and therefore, you know, was doing damage to it. I read that and I cringed because I was scheduled for a test, and yeah, I let her run that thing across my forehead, you know, and I hurried up when I got home and I did my own brow cleansing. You know, in other words, I put on some incense and breathe, you know, just to try to bring healing to it. So I want to back up a little bit, and I still have enough time to go through this. And hopefully you're taking notes. And hopefully, if in fact anything gets stirred inside of you and you have questions for me, please don't hesitate to send them to me either through Facebook. I'm Bill Green on Facebook, located in Texas. And also my email address, which is greenbg52@aol.com. And even my phone number, you know, 469-245-1844. Feel free to, you know, ask any questions that may have gotten stirred up, I'm sorry. And I'll respond to it as promptly and as effectively as I possibly can. So going back a little bit, just to be sure I cover all of what I wanted to talk about in regards to the seven main chakras, the root chakra's corresponding color is red. Very important to keep in mind. So the first chakra, root chakra, its color is red. The second chakra, or the sacral, S-A-C-R-O-R-A-L chakra, is located in the lower abdomen just below the navel, and its corresponding color is orange. The third, or the solar plexus chakra, is the upper abdomen, which is associated with the color yellow, you know, and it deals with issues of confidence, self-worth, and self-esteem. The second, you know, deals with so much of our sexuality and also, you know, our sexual orientations as well. If experiencing overwhelming themes of shame or self-doubt, it's probably, you know, stored in the gut. Now, we store all kind of issues in various places in our body. Not everything is stored in one place. So we might have issues of the heart, or relationships possibly would be stored in the heart chakra. Issues of, but maybe not, maybe more in the third chakra, will to know. So, you know, areas of self-worth and shame stored in the gut, which I think most of us carry a lot of our stress around. You know, not everything, though, is stored in equal places. Some things, you know, are stored in the first chakra, or what I refer to as a pain in the ass. Okay. So anyway, I crack me up sometimes. The heart chakra's corresponding color is green. It deals with our ability to both give and receive love to ourselves and to others. The throat chakra, the fifth chakra, located right at that little place, that little notch that you can feel at the bottom of the throat, it's like you can feel like it's just like a little conclave right there. And that's the throat chakra gland rests right there. And if you tap it gently, like about three times a day, it activates it and it gets it spinning. And it's all about truth. And this truth I'm talking about is the love of truth. You know, when it's open, our truth is communicated both clearly and effectively. When blocked, we struggle to speak, you know, authentically. And anybody who falls into, you know, that place of argument with another, you know, significant other or not, you know, there's always, well, I can't say there's always, but there's this sense of argument that is recognized as both people being right. You know, and that's where, you know, the conflict of as spoken can be conflictual, because who wants to be wrong, right, when we fall into that place? So it's a matter of having to purify motives, and that tends to move beyond that lack of authenticity. But it's hard because it requires that we speak our truth as we believe our truth, which all too often leaves us very vulnerable to, you know, another person's doubt. The third eye chakra, you know, its corresponding color is a dark blue, purple, violet kind of colors. One that I can see in meditation, but I've never been able to capture on paper. And I hadn't seen that color for years, but it came back to me last year when I was at Love's Ranch in Colorado for a couple weeks. I hadn't experienced breath work as a participant for years, and that energy was renewed, and wow, it was really amazing. And so we move to the crown chakra. The third eye chakra, which is, again, sometimes referred to as the brow chakra, right between the eyebrows, you know, is corresponding color. Oh, okay, I did talk about it. Dark blue or purple is the fifth chakra color. It's more of a light blue or turquoise that I didn't talk about. The sixth is, again, dark blue, purple, or violet. As we get closer and closer to the self-actualization, to our self-actualization, our authentic selves, it begins to develop. I'll get into the development. I better get checking the time. It deals with intuition and the ability to move past the ego. When it's unbalanced, there's a sense of disconnect with intuition. And intuition, imagination, and wisdom is what is inspired by the third chakra, the opening of the third eye. The crown chakra, located at the top of the head, is associated with shades of violet, and a glowing white. And sometimes some people even report a kind of a pinkish color. It develops when someone has become evolved enough to tap into higher consciousness, something that can take a lifetime and doesn't happen to everyone. I mean, we're talking about, you know, enlightenment here, self-realization and pure bliss. Pure bliss being the perfect happiness and great joy, typically so as to be oblivious to all other things is what's experienced there. Now, there is a saying, you know, ignorance is bliss. Well, you know, that is something that I really don't have time enough to get into right now, but I will next week. But right now, I just want to be sure to go through this last aspect of the chakra system, which has to do with the development of the various chakras. Like years 1 through 7 is where the root chakra begins to take hold and develop. Ages 8 through 14 is where the sacral chakra begins to develop. Now, the third is ages 15 through 21. That's where the third chakra begins to unfold. So these are all segments of 7 years. 21 through 28 is the heart chakra. 29 through 35 is the throat chakra. 36 through 42 is the third eye. And 43 through 49 is the crown chakra. Now, these are age time elements of age that these chakras go through in personal development. Now, of course, we don't know, at least I don't know, maybe you do, how long a person has on this earth. So it could be that with divine purpose, those who die at earlier stages in life, like I had a brother, Jeff, who died at 39, it could be that, you know, according to this, you know, his third eye hadn't fully opened yet. But maybe through the course of divine consciousness, all 7 levels had, in fact, developed up to the point of his approaching death. And I don't know. You know, I just would like to speculate as that as being a possibility. And there's also the thing to consider as far as what each element of each chakra represents, and also some aspect of dialogue between self and the chakra as far as what the chakra may be expressing to the self. Like the root chakra, its expression to me would be something like, I can grow from an unsteady foundation. Just because my foundation is unsteady doesn't mean I have to be mired in that unsteadiness. I can grow from that unsteadiness, if in fact I'm willing to embrace it and not be defined by it, right? You know, the second, I will always honor others, but not before myself. There are many people who think the true value of honoring others should come before the self. But then what does that say about my relationship with myself if I make others more important to me? Not to say that that's such a terrible thing, but it means that my inner self may go undeveloped, where I may become purely consciously aware of other people's feelings and totally disconnected from my own. That's, for me, a scary thing to consider. That means I'm totally ruled by the opinion of others. Not to say I haven't been there before. You know, I understand that we are, you know, how others perceive us. But that perception, if surrounded by healthy beings, would offer feedback that I have a chance to assess. Is that really the way I want to appear? Is that really the way I want others to see me? Or is my circle healthy enough that they're offering me, you know, healthy feedback that I can say, no, I'm missing the point here. Maybe I'm not investing enough in myself. So anyway, moving on to the solar plexus. Okay, I'm sorry, and let me back up. Here I go. The root chakra element is earth. The sacral chakra's element is water. And its message to the self is, I will always honor others, but not before myself. Okay, the third chakra is the solar plexus. Self-love starts when I accept all parts of myself. Self-love starts when I accept all parts of myself, not ends. That's where it starts. So until I get to the place where I've accepted all parts of myself, I haven't really fully come to understand what my self-love is all about. And that element is fire. So the first chakra is earth, the second is water, and the third is fire. And then moving to the heart chakra, when I love myself, loving others comes easily. And this element is air. And the corresponding ages of development for the second chakra, 8 through 14, third chakra is 15 through 21, and fourth chakra is 22 through 28. And again, this element is air. the throat chakra, I speak my truth always. Now, again, this is moving past the ego base of self, ego-based psychology. So this is moving into a theme of soul-based, where truth resides, right? So I'm talking about a different truth now. It's the love of truth, you know, that I seek to express, not, you know, a self-defined truth that justifies argument. Its element is sound or music. You know, that's what stimulates the throat chakra, which is so powerful in this work that I've been attracted to in regards to breath work, because as I said in previous shows and tonight, you know, it's about, you know, the frequency, you know, of the music moving through the vibration of the body. And what I didn't express today that I want to make a point of making while I'm thinking about it, and it's through this frequency of the music moving through the vibration of the body that can, you know, release or unblock jammed up chakras. Okay, all right. And, but, you know, again, this is all based on the idea of a person being attracted to this. If you're not attracted to it, then everything I'm talking about sounds all woo-woo and kind of, you know, yeah, man, right. You know, so, it, you know, we're perceived and identified by that which we're attracted to. So, of course, if this isn't something that, you know, that rocks your boat, then, you know, that's cool. It's only meant for those who are feeling drawn toward it or attracted by it. Right on? Right on. All right. The sixth chakra, the third eye, once again referred to as the Ajna, that's Ajna center, sometimes called the brow chakra. I am open to exploring what cannot be seen. You know, wow. I mean, is that deep or is that deep? Well, to me, it's deep. You know, why do I say that? Well, there is in Romans, this is out of the King James Version of the Bible, Romans chapter 8, verses 24 to 26 says, "For we are saved by hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man seeth, why does he yet for hope for? Why does he yet hope for? But if we hope for that which we see not, then do we with patience wait for it." You know, so this whole idea of I am open to exploring what cannot be seen, to me that has to do with the hope that is not seen, but it's the hope that I hope is revealed to me. And its element is light, you know, not the artificial light, although that can stimulate, you know, the non-artificial as well. But its element is light. I love this. You know, and then the crown chakra, I am a vessel for love and light. Its element is divine consciousness. You know, and then I think about, again, another aspect of scripture that I think is so powerful in its own expression that sometimes gets lost in, of course, translation. And it comes out of St. John, that I think of St. John's Gospels as the book of love. You know, oh, I wonder what. And it's in chapter 13, verse 34. And it says, "A new commandment," this is Jesus talking because it's in red, "a new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another. A new commandment that I give unto you, that ye love one another." Now, that part we pretty much remember, right? But then there's another thing that's said in that same verse, "as I have loved you, that ye also love one another." Now, I don't know about y'all, but I like to think that I'm striving to love y'all, knowing that, okay, I haven't even come to the place of loving you like Jesus has loved me. You know, that's the work in process, right? Trying to get to it. Now, what I didn't get a chance to talk about tonight is, but I do want to mention, you know, that there's a yoga pose for the crown chakra, and it's called the headstand. Many of Jesus's disciples, well, the original 12 or 13 anyway, were crucified upside down. Never thought of this before, but maybe the Romans were unknowingly performing a very divine act symbolizing something of a greater purpose and everlasting. Maybe, you know, crucifying so many of the disciples upside down. You know, that's the headstand in yoga pose or accessing divine consciousness. I don't know. So next week, I'm going to talk a little bit about the chakra test. I took it. It's only about 10 questions. And what was revealed to me, as I mentioned in the earlier show, was that my dominant chakra is the Ajna Center, which I find very gratifying. So that's pretty much it for tonight's show. Hopefully there's something that came from it that is meaningful to you. Hopefully it's something that maybe was stirred that may cause a question. I'll be doing a workshop here in the Dallas area in June 10th. It's a Saturday. It'll be all-day workshop. And it is also, among other things it will include, there will be a breathwork experience as well. So I'll be giving more detailed information both on Facebook and in future shows leading up to the 10th. I hope all of you have a beautiful and blessed night. And, Will, I hope you're doing well out there. I hope you and Sue are enjoying the evening. I hope your mom made it safely back home after a week spent here in Dallas. It was great for the time that we spent together. And for everyone, have a blessed evening, and see you next week.
Can you the prayer of the children abandoned me in the shadow of an unknown room. Empty eyes with no more tears to cry, turning heavenward toward the cry, Jesus, help me to see the morning light of one more day. But if I should die before I wake, I pray my soul today. Can you feel the hearts of the children aching for home, for something of their very own, reaching hands with nothing to hold on to, but hope for a better day, a better day. Crying, Jesus, help me to feel the love again. But if unknown roads lead away from home, give me loving arms away from the prayer.